Need some motivation on your Chinese business endeavour? Maybe curious about what the Chinese business environment is all about? Or want to laugh out loud listening to war stories on the ground in China? Then this is your show, China Business Cast.
China Business Cast number 36, Mike here, by myself right now. Shlomo is on the road enjoying Prague, and we did catch him for the intro, so we're going to tune in a second. But I just want to also make sure that we mentioned a bunch of different events in China, and Shlomo did a great job to put on his blog, startupnoodle.com, all the different events that he knows about that are worth going to in China. So definitely check that out. We'll have it on the show notes at chinabusinesscast.com. And now for our normal intro. Okay, so Shlomo, where in the world are you right now?
So I'm currently traveling with the family in the Czech Republic, now broadcasting from or recording from Prague.
Nice.
It's been really, really nice trip. We've been here for like 11 days and we're flying back in 2 days. But it's been a magnificent and a very nice place to be. So we had good time.
Yeah.
We had good time.
I've heard it's beautiful. I mean, they say it's one of the older cities in Europe.
Yeah, it's all castles and rivers and, you know, old towns. So you see different, I don't know, metal plaques saying, you know, this was from 16 something something or 17 something something.
Okay.
You know, old hotels, stuff like that. And I really couldn't also resist going and checking out the local startup scene. So I was there last week checking out Startup Yard, which is the local accelerator. And they have 9 startups there. I'm actually going to be at their demo day tonight. So I'm going to scope from there on my Periscope. So you can see more of those startups. And I also met some really cool startups there. I'm going to post about this on Startup Noodle afterwards. Anyway, you'll hear all about it.
Okay, that's exciting. And yeah, also on my side is events here in the south of China, a lot in Shenzhen, Startup Salad, or the Big Salad. They have Dave McClure and the whole Geeks on a Plane this Saturday, if you know, right mm-hmm. after we publish. That's going to be a big one. And the team has worked really hard to make that a huge, huge event. And of course, I keep on talking about it on the show intro, but my own cross-border summit is really getting close now. So you know how it is, Shlomo, this last minute insanity.
9 days, huh?
Yeah, the insanity of people trying to get tickets last minute and with all these questions about hotels and everything. So, you know, I think you understand and the listeners may understand just the insanity of...
We had rough time finding the time to talk because I'm traveling and you're hustling with the Sporter Summit. So yeah, definitely. Definitely. I actually made, was that a week ago or maybe just before leaving Israel, I made a list of all tech conferences in China for 2016. That's on Startup Noodle. And I also added Cross Border Summit, of course.
Thank you.
There as well.
Yep.
And you can see that list there.
Okay.
But yeah, it's. I agree. It's pretty insane.
Yes. Yes. So maybe we're such insane, busy travelers and business people. Let's get into the show. We have number 36 of China Business Cast, Bridget Riley, and you helped. You knew her before from AmCham. She's an editor in Beijing.
Exactly. I couldn't make it to this recording, so it will be only Mike. So Mike, thank you for holding this up that time.
Sure, sure. We got each other's backs, you know.
Yeah, let's go. So
okay, let's go. All right, thank you everybody for tuning in to another China Business Cast. I'm on my own today. I hope I do okay without Shlomo. And we have with us Bridget Riley. Thanks for being here, Bridget.
Hey, my pleasure, Mike.
Great, great. So yeah, Shlomo set up the interview and we were catching up before. You're the magazine editor at AmCham, which is the American Chamber of Commerce in Beijing. So you get to deal a lot with news and articles in China. So I think it's pretty interesting for our listeners. So thank you for coming here, Bridget.
Yeah, my pleasure. Absolutely.
Great. So yeah, I'm sure people are familiar with Chamber of Commerce in different parts of the world. And in Beijing, of course, it's got to be pretty big. Can you give us a little bit of course, like overview of AmCham in Beijing and why people use the service?
Yeah, absolutely. We are the American Chamber of Commerce in the People's Republic of China, or AmCham China for short. And so I often get this question anywhere from a cocktail party to a business meeting, which is that, you know, aren't you the same? How are you different from Shanghai or something like that? all the AmChams around the world are these separate entities. And yeah, we're friendly with each other, but we do our own work. And so AmCham China is based in Beijing. But with a name like AmCham China, we also try to speak for a larger region as well. So we have chapters in Tianjin, central China with an office in Wuhan, and northeast China with offices in Shenyang and Dalian. So we try to be a very comprehensive voice of China. But, you know, each chamber of commerce kind of does its own thing, tailored to wherever they are. You know, if they're in Singapore, they're doing one thing. If they're in Shanghai, they're a little bit more finance-focused than us in Beijing. We're very big on government advocacy, but we also represent a huge community of 3,800 people coming from 1,000 different member companies. So we try to do a little bit of it all. That's networking, really high caliber events, government debriefing, since we have the embassy right here. It's a government outreach as well, letting our members have meetings with high level government officials. And it's also a bit of social. You know, we have the annual charity ball every year. And, you know, we were really established in 1981. We've reemerged in 1981 after a long hiatus from 1919 when the chamber first was established in Beijing, and we reemerged in 1981. And it really became the heart of American business and the heart of the American community in Beijing and then beyond. And so I think it's a place where people come to network with each other, to reach the government in a unified voice. That's really important, you know, just so you're not out there on your own, each company one by one approaching the government, but really bringing a unified voice to your issues. I think that's a really powerful part of the American Chamber of Commerce in China. And so it's all these things, and we try to do all of it. And so I get to write stories about all of it, which awesome. Is the best part of that. So I'm talking to, you know, head of Intel in China or startups just getting their woofy in Beijing and everyone in between. It's a really fun job.
Great. You must be learning tons. I we have a similar experience here at China Business Cast, you know, interviewing and learning. So I can imagine how much different experiences you get on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really cool talking to people, you know, at really big companies and those just starting out. And I really like it because I find a lot of the Americans doing business in China have these really interesting, crazy stories of why they came over here and what it was like in the early days, you know, when they were like camels on Chang'an Avenue and all these crazy stories. I wouldn't do this if people weren't such weirdos.
I hear you.
If it were such a conservative organization, I don't think I'd be so keen on it. But I think I got my first lesson that AmCham China is not so conservative when I was first interviewing, and I was meeting with the president at the time, Mark Duvall, and I was in my, you know, my most conservative navy blue suit. I was ready to, you know, talk about business interests. And then I sit down with Mark Duvall, and we end up talking about the books we want to write about China for the whole interview.
Okay.
And he's now a top leader at Terex, an American construction company. So, you know, you get a really interesting insight into the very interesting and dynamic people that are running these companies around here. It's not so conservative or straightforward.
Yeah, that's the cool thing, right? I mean, so I'm thinking about clothing and dress. So how's the office environment?
So the office environment at AmCham China is very similar to a lot of small businesses and nonprofits. We're maybe not as frenzied as a corporate environment. We're a little bit laid back. And so we often have, you know, members coming in and out of the office, people visiting China coming in and out of the office. It's very laid back and friendly and sociable, just like the environment we try to create for our members as well.
Great. Yeah, that's good to hear. And so moving more about you, a little bit your background, we stalked you on LinkedIn before the call and and we see that...
So those were all those views they told me I had.
Yeah, we had been crowdsourcing that. And we see you've been in Silicon Valley, San Francisco. Is that where you're from? Or what's your experience with that?
So I'm originally from Florida. I grew up near where the space shuttle goes off. So that was my first interaction with technology, I guess. And so then after college at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, I went to San Francisco to do my first editorial internship outside of college. And I wound up at the San Francisco Business Times, which was really a fortunate choice for me because it was full of really talented journalists. And so while I was there, the guy in the cubicle next to me, Ron Ludi, he was the one covering healthcare as well as China. And with him and many other people, I just couldn't hear enough about China. Wow. People just wouldn't stop talking about it. I was interviewing some people for our special edition about China, and I was interviewing some San Francisco-based architecture firms that were doing work in China, and they, on the phone, were just, you know, the type of voice I don't hear normally in a business interview. They were just so enthusiastic about going to China and seeing 12 cranes at one time. They were just like breathless in these descriptions of China. So it kind of started to stick in my head, even though I was pretty happy in San Francisco. But, you know, when you're in that environment at that time, this was 2010 and 2011, you just couldn't avoid the China talk. And so I was catching up with one of my friends who had studied abroad there and was, you know, giving me another earful of China talk. And so I caught up with her later, and she said she's moving back to Beijing and had an empty room in her apartment. So with all this talk influencing me and then a room I could stay in, it just seemed like an open door that was too enticing not to go through.
Great. Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of true, right? I think that was about, everybody's talking about China in the U.S. I feel like it's, at least also when I was there, and it's always a hot topic, and the few of us, like the brave, that make it out here, and you're still here. So that was 2010, 2011 you came?
Yeah, so I came with a wave that I think a lot of 20-somethings followed, where you're out of college and you're maybe looking at the job prospects, and maybe you're not so excited about the job prospects in the U.S., and so you look for something else. And so I think I was one of many, many Americans who came over to China around that time. God. And like many Americans coming to China at that time, I taught English my first year to a class of 22 and 3-year-olds. So wow. That was quite an experience. and people talk down about the teaching English experience, but I think for a lot of Americans, that was their entry point before they moved on to other things. And meeting the parents and seeing the culture through that lens of kids and parents is I think a good starting point for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's definitely a way to it's very well paid here, and there's definitely a demand, especially for native English speakers to English teaching opportunities here. So yeah, I think the next question is, of course, I'm kind of holding my breath here, but I'm definitely excited to hear your answer. So yeah, I think maybe that time, maybe 2010, 2011, or that kind of last, like maybe 10 years, it's kind of been everybody coming to China. I'm not sure if there's some kind of changing times, but I'd like to hear your opinion. I feel like Shlomo and I were preparing for this. We feel like nowadays it's not as open arms to come to China. There at least is kind of vibe with certain policies and news we're hearing. I'm not sure if you're allowed to talk about it. Is there any trends you see from the AmCham side, or maybe if you want to speak personally? I just feel like there's this kind of like a little bit love-hate relationship that's getting more tension lately. I don't know if you agree or what you think.
Yeah, actually, the American Chamber of Commerce in China has a lot to say about that. This year, we released our 2016 Business Climate Survey, and a record level of companies said they were feeling less welcome in China. So this year it was 77% of our member companies saying that, and that's pretty big. And when you break that down by industry, for those in technology and R&D intensive fields, it was even higher. It was more than 80% felt less welcome now than ever.
Yeah, I would. I feel like we all feel like that. I'm down in the South, and I also get that same feeling that I don't really know what's behind it exactly, but I remember when I first came in, I was in 08, and everybody in China, all these Chinese factories and owners and random people on the street were just like excited to see me and welcoming me. And I'm not saying that it's not getting that now, but it's not as strong as I feel it used to be. And I don't know what's the real goal or intention, but it's something we're all noticing and talking about more in our circles. So
absolutely. I see it getting more complex. Definitely a love hate thing, because even though more member companies said they were feeling less welcome, still a lot of them and more companies were saying that their margins were decreasing. A lot of people still said their return on investment was great. They're optimistic about a lot of things. It's this really complex love hate thing going on. And it's just really hard to nail down to one particular feeling or one particular reason. You know, China is a more complex relationship for the U.S. The direct investment from China into the U.S. is really just skyrocketing and really making the relationship not of just U.S. coming to China, but a really complex back and forth relationship that's exciting to watch, but also resulting in different feelings, more complex feelings for American business in China.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I also feel like the industries and, you know, maybe we'll say American or Western companies has been changing over the years as well. Is there anything from your survey or your experience that you can see, like different sectors or company sizes that are coming and going or transitioning?
Well, we are seeing a lot of companies trying to move a little bit more out of China to diversify their holdings in the region. And we're seeing people in the services industry are moving more toward the developed part of Asia. I'm thinking Japan and South Korea. And then those in like infrastructure and resources, they're moving more towards Southeast Asia, where there's more opportunities there. So it's, again, it's a very complex matter. It's not just one big tide going somewhere. It's different sectors finding different opportunities elsewhere, or different sectors still finding tons of opportunity here. I mean, tons of our member companies are setting up R&D here, which shows a really long-term commitment. While we see others leaving, you know, many more are setting up their first R&D here or building further on R&D here. It's very strange. Every time I want to point out one stat, I want to point out another stat that says something, if not contradictory, then just very muddling. Like one of the biggest challenges for our member companies is rising labor costs. But then member companies also say that the biggest way for them to promote innovation in China and within their own company is to really invest in training and in their people. So I don't really have a very clear answer for you. Sorry about that.
I think that's normal with everything here, right?
Yeah. So
nothing is black and white. And but it was definitely some good insights. So, you know, probably a popular question you get asked, you know, when you're out with your friends, or, you know, is there any favorites you've met or interviewed with the magazine, or some highlights, some stories that you can maybe share with us?
This is like the toughest question.
Yeah, I don't know what I would say if somebody asks me, to be honest, but or maybe you can give us a couple of them, or, you know, something that could be some, give us a laugh or.
Yeah, I would say the most interesting interview I've had so far was with, I have two stories. So one was with Sylvia Pan at United Family Hospital, which is a very prominent wholly foreign-owned healthcare brand here in Beijing and many other places around China, and even a place in Mongolia as well. So I was going to interview her, and I thought I had a good idea of her background, but then I learned that she started her career in the People's Liberation Army as a translator. And she had these stories of being out doing these really tough treks with huge bags on her back and struggling. And she told me this story of overcoming hardships through the PLA that was just so amazing and so unbelievable when she's sitting in this very corporate office as the major head of BJU, the UFH Beijing Hospital. And then on top of that, from her humble beginnings to this great post, then she also says she mostly communicates with her team through WeChat And she subsequently asked me to, you know, add her on WeChat. And of course, it's becoming a more and more common experience in Beijing when I interview people, but just the like very interesting origin stories of people that I meet who seem to be at such a high level, but really had such simple beginnings, such interesting origin stories. I really appreciate talking to Sylvia. She was a really smart lady.
Cool. We could link to that too, if you like.
And then I would say the second most interesting story I worked on and person I spoke with was David Shoemaker at the NBA based in China. The NBA has such a cool story of how they entered China and just really were a runaway hit. They got onto CCTV in the 90s, which is kind of a shoe-in for just building a huge audience in China from there on out. And also to be in front of so many Chinese viewers at that time in the NBA, you know, the early 90s was a pretty exciting time for the NBA. Like everybody can name a couple players, even me who doesn't really follow much basketball. So, so it was such an amazing story of just getting extremely lucky, being at the right place at the right time, and then building on that success and once again, just creating this really complex relationship between China and the U.S. So, of course, they started to build this amazing audience, but it wasn't just getting money from fans that the NBA fostered. It was also getting advertisers from China to put their ads up on the court during American games. So these are Chinese companies putting their ad up on the court for a Chinese audience purely because the TV is probably being shown to almost more fans in China than anywhere else in the world. And so that interesting business relationship was just so interesting to me. And then it also results today in the NBA players donning Chinese New Year jerseys every year, again, for the sake of these Chinese viewers. And I just thought this was so fascinating and so interesting and so complex.
Cool. No, thank you. This has been great highlights, and definitely however you can, if you can share them with us and our show notes, people can get the full gist.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you. And of course, I don't know if we always talk, we bring this up too much in different, most of our interviews, but I don't know if our podcast sometimes works, sometimes doesn't work inside mainland China, but censorship, of course, is something I don't know if you're even available to talk about, but it even affected our recording today a little bit. But is there ways that, I don't know if you can speak for AmCham, but maybe you personally and or AmCham maybe can deal with that, and also the publication of your magazine is, however you want to handle this question, I know it's a sensitive one, if you can answer it.
We don't really face outside censorship for our publication because it's really more of an in-house publication just representing our members and what we do as a chamber. But I will say that in this business climate survey that I mentioned before, we do this every year, and it really speaks to the general sentiment of American business in China. In this survey, a lot of people responded that the internet controls were a major cause for concern for their business. And, you know, it can limit their access to crucial data, crucial tools for their business. And so it really gets in the way of business and running your business in an efficient and effective way. And so this is a big topic for members, especially smaller members. Those of a bigger scale can install VPNs very easily at a company-wide scale, but those who are smaller, they really depend on these platforms like Astral and ExpressVPN that are targeted intensely lately. And so it can really hamper business. It can restrict the way you access data, the way you communicate, the way you use tools. And it's a major concern for American companies and for
I totally agree.
Any companies in China. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just talking about this yesterday to a friend, giving her some tips. She was pretty frustrated and can't access, I think, like 80% of what she does for her work and something like that. And, I was explaining it to her and, you know, like I think others in her company just kind of told the outside of China office that they just can't use the same tools and systems that the rest of the world's offices uses and need to use their own local tools. But then, you know, how does the rest of the intercompany, you know, in other countries deal with that? You know, we were just kind of going on saying, you know, I guess after time, you just kind of just stop fighting, you know. Yeah, there's these VPNs and tools, but sometimes they work, sometimes they don't work. You're always kind of like, so sometimes people just kind of give up and accept the censorship. And I guess that's, you know, that's the goal, I guess. And just kind of, you know, I'll try to hold my rant, but you know, it's I guess it's what the higher ups want. So it's pretty, a little bit sad.
Yeah, and it's also very tricky for business because maybe you're using one tool and it becomes an important part of what you do, and then the next day it doesn't work. So I think that's maybe the most most annoying thing is when something's working and it becomes part of your business. You're excited about this new tool, and then it doesn't work the very next day.
Got it. All right. So, Bridget, let's say there's an well, say American, or maybe we can go general, more like Western or foreign company thinking about making a move to China or maybe Beijing specifically. What would you suggest they do, maybe to get some help or some support or utilize what you're offering? What should they do?
Yeah, so AmCham China has a great amount of peers you can reach out to. We have a lot of working groups that you can talk to, you know, center around food and beverage or alcohol or ICT. Any industry pretty much has a working group here at AmCham China. And we also have in-house experts who you can consult about, you know, what's it like for a leather manufacturer in China right now? Should I do it? So we have people who can help you through the process. And then also I would say, you know, for people making their own companies, starting up their own company, China can be a tricky place. It's not the most welcoming place in the world because that initial phase, you're kind of forced to be this, you know, unofficial person, probably on the inappropriate visa. It's just kind of a scary initial phase. But then the money is so enticing. There's a lot of money here and a lot of investors, and that's such a enticing thing for so many people wanting to start their own company. So it's definitely a weighing the risks kind of thing. Coming over here, and if it works out, it's huge and it's great. The market is so enticing. You know, our members are still super optimistic, still getting a return on investment. But, you know, the welcome mat is not as welcoming as it once was.
Yeah, like I have a Woofie in Shenzhen, and I remember
Congratulations.
I did that years and years ago, but I remember I was so nervous, like, because you basically feel like you have to be illegally operating before you're legal. There's not like at least maybe I'm wrong, but I think I used a lawyer and she told me that it's okay to hire like one assistant, you know, and pay them like obviously before you have a legal company because that person's like helping you set up the company. But I was like, I'm on a business visa hiring people illegally, technically, right. But I'm opening a company. And yeah, I just feel like a rebel here, right? Maybe that's just maybe we can generalize a little bit. Maybe it's just I always respect it too. But I always respect people leaving their home country, whether it's an American coming to China or a Chinese going to, you know, America or anywhere. It's just I think it is kind of like going against your normal life track. So it's not easy. And I guess coming to China is probably one of the more difficult ones. But I think it's similar anywhere going to a new culture and environment, but yeah, it's definitely, I can agree with you. You feel like you're just fighting everything always. It's like something people should be aware of.
Yeah. And there's some, you know, big investments you have to make at the very beginning, like renting a space, hiring people can be really hard in the beginning. That's a challenge that a lot of small business owners say to us because, you know, you might go through the hiring process, sign the contract and they never show up. That's a major challenge for our member companies as well.
Yeah, to be able to come here and stay here is definitely a feat. So, all right, Bridget, I think that's all we really have. Of course, we want you to share any ways people could reach out to you or AmCham, websites, emails, social media.
Yeah, so this week might not be the best week to tweet me, but if you wanted to tweet me otherwise, it'd be Bridget_Riley. And reaching out to me on LinkedIn is a great way too. And also going to the AmCham China website, you can find me there too, amchamchina.org.
Okay.
You can find all our great content.
Great.
Well.
Great. Yeah, we'll link it up all in the show notes. So, all right, we got through the call and smooth sailing. And thanks again.
Yeah, thanks to you, Michael.
Doing business in China is a complex world. You can quickly feel alone and lost in its maze. But don't worry, China Business Cast is here for you. Sign up for our newsletter and regular updates on our website at www.chinabusinesscast.com. Thanks for tuning in.